I have a lot of takes.
So great, wonderful to see you all. But I have to tell you how I came to tonight's song. I'm still very torn. I don't feel like we can just go back to our regular routine. The fact that we still, unfortunately, have over 130 hostages still, and Israel's still at war, and there's still stuff going on.
Okay, so is it
So I
more what
feel
even
so no. So I'm. I would last time we spoke about what did we speak about last time? Oseh Shalom. We talked about
peace.
peace. Talked about war and peace. And the time before that, we talked about what did we talk about?
Was the
Was
song from the services,
the song
the Hebrew
from the
song.
service? I'm blanking. It'll come to me. But
Isn't
I
it one
was.
song like the Pointer Sisters or something? One of the songs we did.
No, maybe we did. Did we do We Are Family?
That's
We did
nice.
it. We
That's
did
the
that.
one.
Yes, we did
Yes.
do that
Yeah.
song. We did Family, right?
It's that.
Yeah, right. Twisted Sister, Pointer Sister, all the same. Yes, it's great. So, but I didn't feel like I just, oh, pick a random song. So my mind went to, okay, maybe there's a song about hostages or I don't know, kidnapping. And I have ideas that are, I'm like, no, nothing really struck my fancy to really be appropriate.
Yeah.
But it got me thinking. The
What was the
worst,
and I didn't
what
even
is the
know.
worst thing that the hostages are suffering right now? One word.
Timelessness.
Okay, that's a good word.
Uncertainty.
Good.
Fear.
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 Fear. I toyed with that one, but I chose silence.
The sound of
The
silence.
sound of silence.
Oh
Good.
my. Coming back with my old friend.
Oh.
I don't know it.
That would be like heresy. Oh my gosh. You have to have Alexa play it. Huh? That you didn't know? Oh. Yeah. They hear the lyrics. If anybody doesn't know it, shame on you. Right? But the sound of silence.
Good song.
It's a great song. What's it about?
Depression.
Okay. Should we have Alexa play it for us?
Sure.
Yeah. Alexa, play Sound of Silence.
Something about new being in New York,
Sound
being in the cold and gray, something like that.
Original.
Well, that'd be awesome. That
Alexa.
might be the boxer you're thinking of.
Oh, maybe so.
You know the song?
Maybe so.
I know.
Could you picture all the Alexas within here?
Well, so it'll be a, we'll have a whole symphony.
No.
We all have to know
Oh,
this about.
time smile. I've come to talk with you again.
Pay attention to what it is you're trying to convey.
That deceives what I want to speak. That was planned. That still in the sound. Restless dreams that I walked alone. Our streets of cobblestone. Beneath the halo of a street light, I turn my
And my
collar
collar
to
did
the
go
golden
down.
when my eyes were
Eyes
set
were shut
by
like
a
a flash of a neon
slave to
light. Let the
Babylon.
night,
Stereo. Touch the
the
sound
sound
of
of
soul.
silence,
Heaven will
fools
make
you
you
do
laugh
in
soft.
song.
10,000
1,000
people, maybe
people, maybe
more.
more.
People talking
Without
without speaking.
speaking and
People hearing without
without
listening.
listening,
People writing
writing
songs
songs
without
that voices would ever
strings.
share.
No
No one dare
disturb the
disturb the
sound.
sound of silence. Tonight you do not know. Silence like a cancer grows. Hearts that I might hit you. In my arms that I might hit you. Silence. Bullshit. Pray to the neon god. And I don't think we already sung it. The world was forming. And the silence that the words of the prophets alluring the wind halls and famine halls. Listen to the sound of silence. Oh, I love that song.
Okay. It is a beautiful song. It really, really is. What are some themes that come to mind?
Well, it's definitely
urban. Right, so we'll get to that one next time. Hey, calm down there.
Right. It's definitely, you know, there are two New York tunes. And it's definitely about living in the city, the subway, the tenements, the lights, the neon lights.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are some other words that come to mind?
Judgment.
What do you mean? Judgment.
People, they talk about like people talking about speaking, people mm-hmm. hearing about listening, people coming to like their own conclusions.
Actually, Alexa.
Okay.
For people not really listening to you. Hearing but not listening.
Hearing, not listening.
Being invisible.
Big time. Big, 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 big. We use the expression, but that really deserves a lot of thought.
Fast-paced life.
Hearing, not listening. We'll have to talk about that a little bit more. Would you, how about we add some words of isolation?
Exactly what I was
talking about. Like when all these people and everybody's kind of alone anyway.
It's an interesting paradox. The more people, the more lonely.
We're gonna touch exactly on that point.
Sorry, I just woke up.
That's good. It's good. I wish I got a nap today. That's a great point. Okay? Alienation, disconnected, lonely. Which is as Dimitri points out, how ironic. Mm. You're surrounded by so many people. Walking the streets, probably of New York, right? Bustling with noise. Nobody's listening. Just totally disconnected. The sound of silence, on the one hand, can be extremely painful. Extremely painful. You can be in a room full of people and you are completely disconnected and you feel alone. It's as if nothing, as if you're not even there. Mm-hmm. I just read on this trip that we took with our teens out to Arizona. So there was an incident regarding some of the kids and they inappropriate with another kid. So the disciplinarian to the rescue. I wish RVD were there. But it needed. So part of the
consequence,
thank you. Punishment was too harsh of a word, but the consequence is that the next day's morning activity, they had to stay back with me. It was bad enough they had to stay back, but then they had to stay back with me and listen to me drone on for 45 minutes with a Torah lesson.
Which is a privilege.
Oh, yeah, thank you very much. One day they'll get there, but not yet. Right now, it's still a severe punishment. And we talked about, I gave them the following trivia question. I said, how can a person commit murder without doing a thing? Great question.
Murder.
Yeah, you can kill someone without doing a thing.
By letting them lie on the sidewalk.
Right? So but you have to condition yourself to think that way, because the natural instinct when it comes to killing somebody is that you went ahead and you were proactive. You did something against somebody.
Inaction is as bad.
Inaction is also. And I brought it to their attention that from a Torah perspective, you can kill somebody by ignoring them. Now, it's not a capital offense. I'm not suggesting that it is, but it's from a philosophical perspective to have, you know, what's the worst thing? I was a fairly good athlete once upon a time. I got chosen relatively early on when it came to pickup teams, but I had plenty of friends that were not so athletic. The guy who was always chosen last, or really not chosen, right? How do you think that feels? It's a horrible
feeling.
I know
how that feels.
Okay, let's not get personal. Okay? I would have picked you first. Right? But that level of ignoring and just as if you don't exist, you're like you're killing the person because their human dignity has been destroyed. When you're alone, even when you're amidst a crowd, that sound of silence really hurts. It really hurts.
It's worse than actually being alone.
Correct. Correct. So I think that's really, if you read over the lyrics again, that's what they're describing. It's that total disconnected with anybody else, and they're surrounded by everybody. What are you going to say?
Well, whenever I heard the song, which is like, not all the time. I've never like really listened to it like closely. But to me, I always felt like it was more of a yearning to connect than just like, yes, there's isolation, but I always felt like there was a yearning part of it.
I think that's true. I think they're reflecting the truth, but perhaps pining for how to correct this.
But it's a friend. Oh, sorry.
But it's a friend? What do you mean?
I mean, hello, darkness, my old friend. In other words,
meaning I've
what
been,
I know.
I've been here before. I've been here before.
And, you know, I have a certain familiarity that equals a certain comfort, even though that's not where you want to be. But sometimes we go where we're comfortable. It's familiar.
It could be familiar territory.
Maybe unhealthy.
Right.
To be there,
correct. That's correct. What are you going to say?
I always thought that song was about the isolation of teenagers.
Huh.
Because when Simon and Garfunkel wrote it, they were very young. And my interpretation always was they were both kind of outside the mainstream, so to speak. And that always spoke to me about how isolated and alienated is probably a better word, that teenagers feel invisible or misunderstood.
I think there's a lot of truth to this. I'm not, again, as I say this every month, right? I don't know if this is exactly what they have in mind. But when I hear this, these are themes that come up in my head. And I'm like, okay, how do we look at it from a Torah perspective? Valid points, not valid. What are strategies to deal with this? I have no idea what Simon and Garfunkel meant. I have no idea. I probably can't even get the things that they were on when they wrote it. Whatever. Maybe. Baltimore City, I don't know, maybe. But I think we are touching on really the critical points that it's metaphorical, right? It's not literally the absence of noise, that there's sound of silence. It's really that sense where messages are not being heard. They may be hearing, there may be noise of great information, great things that can impact someone's life, but nobody's listening. Even though I've been doing this for many, many years, I'm always shocked. I don't know why. At some point, I should just realize that's the job of a teacher. But like, people actually are listening. It's shocking. I find it shocking. You know, I want to share these things, but okay. You know, go talk to yourself or something. But people want to hear. People listen. What in a world where people don't listen? we face this, I think we face this challenge in a way we have not in a long, long time. We are becoming more and more disconnected. Now listen to some of these statistics. It's unbelievable. The current U.S. Surgeon General, Dr. Murphy, Americans are suffering from, his words, an epidemic of loneliness and isolation with profound health consequences. Quote, the mortality impact of being socially disconnected is similar to that caused by smoking up to 15 cigarettes a day, and even greater than that associated with obesity and physical inactivity. People feel alone.
Yes, because they...
We're going to talk about this, the fact that everybody's on their
gateway to the world, but not.
But not to others.
Yeah.
Also, it's such a great way to seek out the thing that you already think to get validated, which is so...
Yeah.
These
are exactly the things I want to talk about.
May I share what
Please.
Kind of plans within my head? Oh,
my job
it's
here is
kind
right.
Of not, there is no paradox. There is nothing unusual. But we all know that noise, it's very hard to discern a certain voice because there is too much noise. Same with how do we adulterate our and before throw them out?
You blank them out.
You blank them out. So there are too many lines cause the loss of message.
It's funny you call it a paradox.
There is no paradox. It's actually very obvious, very kind of plain.
I'm going to read this. Allow me. I love it. Have you ever been lonely? It's a strange emotion, isn't it? You can be in a crowded room and yet feel lonely, or you can be totally alone in a forest and not feel it at all. It can disappear, one second, Dimitri, it can disappear with one incoming ring of your phone or intensify minute by minute while at a boisterous party. She writes, there is a paradox here. It's those very qualities I value, my self-sufficiency, my independence, my feeling of completeness that can lead to my loneliness. The strength I gain from being self-sufficient and self-contained weakens my resistance to loneliness. I am self-sufficient, but I crave something. I am independent, but I need help. I am complete, but there's an empty hole inside of me. What's missing?
What is this you're reading?
An article that some lady wrote.
Wow.
She's talking about her own experience.
How about an entirely different perspective?
But one thing, I'm curious. What is she missing?
Maybe loneliness, it's our defense mechanism against too much noise and too many people.
But maybe to an extreme. What's missing in this lady and in us when we feel that loneliness?
Like when you shut your...
What's the word?
Connection.
Connection. That's what's missing. That's the missing.
Well, it's like when someone loses a spouse, you like die of broken hearts.
Oh, I think COVID has had a big impact on this as far as the elderly and other people. And then what happened is that people now work from home. And I think that has compounded loneliness because you don't have everybody in the office and eating at the coffee and
right.
whatever.
I mean, it's great for dry cleaning. It's
oh,
great
there are a lot of benefits.
Gas. You know, there's benefits.
My daughter's a
why is it great for dry cleaning? I can't dry clean my own stuff. I still think it's a bunch of stains.
In her pajamas
you have to wear
on
suits so you don't
have
to. To stay home? No, he's not a total teacher either. I mean,
I still teach on Zoom.
But yes,
but I teach in sweatpants where nobody knows.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're locked in there.
No question.
But
and you have to make your structure, and it changes everything.
It's changed the way we connect.
Yes, that is correct. I think this word, connectedness, is really a pivotal word in the conversation. So let's look at it from what do we as Jews do to combat this problem?
Minion.
Okay.
Gotta have 10.
Okay. Right away, the fact that we have the concept of going to synagogue. I know it's very non-rabbinic, but I'll say it anyway. I do not think that the synagogue is the number one important institution in a in Jewish life.
Mm-mm.
I'm just saying it's not very rabbinic-like, because most rabbis will tell you that. I don't believe that to be true.
Think it's family?
I do think it's home and family.
Oh,
I do.
That's
I do.
Core unit.
I do.
Yeah.
I do
yeah.
think home. I do think home. Now, don't misquote me. I didn't say don't go to synagogue. Go. It's an important, a very important piece.
But
very important.
Go with the family.
Okay. There is definitely that concept. Our structure of how we observe and how we practice our Judaism. Yes, 100% true. One can pray in the privacy of their home. Not a problem. That is a legitimate prayer. God accepts that 100%. But it's not the optimum.
You can have 9 people over too in your home.
That is true.
I mean,
but by definition, that becomes a congregation.
Yeah. Oh, so it's
dues are not. I hate to break it. Dues is not the defining line.
But if it's happening in your home, you should consider it.
You can even get a tax deduction. But okay. No, but the fact that we structure, right? I'll give you a perfect example. Right, the next holiday that we're going to celebrate in a larger is Purim. Right, God willing, in March we'll do that in March, and we'll talk about it hopefully when we get a little closer. Can I fulfill the mitzvah of listening or reading Megillat Esther, which is what we read, right? That scroll. Can I do that in the privacy of my home? Yes or no, Ed?
Sure.
As long as
you have a scroll.
Right, you have a scroll, you know how to read it.
Sure.
100% legit. Then why don't we?
Because we don't have
hard to read.
Nah, that's not why. That's not why.
Yeah,
sure. How about in my circles where a lot of people know how to read, a lot of people have a scroll.
You're sharing it.
That is part of the celebration and the observance, is to do it in a public manner as a congregation. I mean, everything about Purim talks about community. The whole storyline is as a people. The first words out of Esther's mouth, when Mordechai says, okay, it's time to reveal your identity, she says, go gather all the Jews. That's step number one. And then she says, fast, and that we can beseech God for mercy. But step number one was gather the Jews. There's a concept of we come together as a people, and we observe it that way. It's part and parcel who we are as a people. We're meant to be doing it this way.
But excuse me, I'm not to be contrary at all. But I mean,
but
I'm just wondering what other groups celebrate things and don't all gather together. I mean,
Muslims pray with
together.
But I mean, when it's time for holidays.
Do they have a concept of a minion?
They
need a quorum? I don't think so. It's. I mean, they do it because, you know, it's convenient. Everybody gets together. Correct me if I'm wrong. Anybody. I don't think that there's a concept that to do certain prayers, you have to have a quorum.
Oh, right.
In Judaism, there are certain prayers you cannot say unless you have a quorum. I'm not familiar with that. It is part of who we are. I love the fact we call ourselves Am Yisrael Chai, right? Am. I think I shared it here. Last time or whatever. Am Yisrael is spelled Ayin Mem. Am means nation. But if you put a different vowel, because we know in Hebrew, vowels are the symbols, right? The letters don't change, but the sound are the vowels. So instead of it being Am Yisrael, you can read it as Im. Im means?
With.
The word for nation, Am, Am Yisrael Chai, the nation of Israel, is by its definition im. It's a with.
That's so cool.
One contrary point is before Shema, if you're alone, there's an addition.
That's true, but that's for a technical reason, because you want to be able to get 248 words. So when you don't have a quorum where the chazan, the leader, ends by repeating the last three words, you supplement it by adding your own three when you're alone.
Huh?
Okay. Does anybody? Okay, so let me fill you in here. Okay. Nice try.
The fact that you might answer me.
You looked at it and have to look it up, but then your mom is like, how does he do it? Okay, so at the end of the Shema, we all know the Shema. Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. Fine, and we have three paragraphs, right? Fine. So the end of the three paragraphs ends with the words Hashem Elokechem Emet, right? Adonai Eloheinu Emet. In I think virtually every congregation, to get to the next stage, when you want to announce like what you're up to, the Chazan repeats those last three words. Why? Okay, so you just let everybody know where you're up to. No, there's a bigger reason. There are 245 words in the Shema. 245. Okay? I love the number 248. That's really what I like. Much better than 245. Yeah. She's like, what? Are you smoking like Simon and Garfunkel stuff? No, 248. Anybody?
Number of mitzvahs.
No, there's 613, but you're on the right track.
I'm one of them. I don't know.
Let's say 248 positive commandments. The things we are to do.
Thou shalt.
Thou shall, right? Mm-hmm. As opposed to thou shall not are 365. Mm-hmm. 365, 248 for a total of?
613.
Fine. So 248 is a constant number. You see that in many places. So Sammy asked, so one second, there's this prayer, Shema, that if I pray by myself, I say prior to saying the word Shema Yisrael, I add El Melech Ne'eman. If you look in your Siddur, it's printed in little small letters and it says, silently, when alone, you say El Melech Ne'eman. Why, Sammy asks, you see, it's different. My answer is because I want to get 248. Mm-hmm. There's 245 that are part of the Shema, okay? If you're in a minyan, if you have a quorum, so then the Chazan repeats the last three words, you get your three extra, you're at 248. But if you're not with a quorum, you're still down 245, we add the three words.
And you're still obligated, if you're not in a minyan, to say the Shema.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's the answer, that's how you get your 248. But counterpoint again is that even if you're praying alone, when you get to the Amidah, the Shemona Esrei, it's in the plural. Did you ever notice that? Heal us, even if you're praying all by yourself. Forgive us. Redeem us. Always in the plural, even when you're all alone. Because that's who we are. We are a community, even if you're all alone. It's built on the premise that you're never really alone. Im Yisrael. Got it? Mm-hmm. Great idea. Okay. But let's keep going. Okay? Let's take a great example. The Torah tells us that when the Jews left Egypt, there were a few occasions as they traveled through the desert that God commanded Moses to take a census. How many Jews there were? Right? What's so funny? I didn't get to the punchline yet.
Yeah.
You're ready. You're intuiting where we're going with this. Okay. So there's a lot of discussion about what's the point of the census, especially if you follow it historically, you find that the census was taken not that many months after the first one. It's like, okay, it didn't change all that much in a few months.
Was it when you were supposed to pay half a shekel?
That's correct. That's one of the times of when they had their first building campaign in Jewish history.
The building fund.
You're laughing. I'm serious.
I already built a Beit HaMikdash in my other shul.
Yeah.
So I gotta be thankful.
I can't stand the building.
The half shekel.
Guys, don't tell.
The half shekel was given by every person and is taken as that was used as the means to counting for the census. Because we don't count people. We don't count people by head. We don't go one, two, three. We don't do that. Curious why?
Why?
Yeah. Counting's like Onan, isn't it?
It's like what?
Like Onan.
Like Onan?
Mm-hmm.
Owning. I'm like, what's Onan? I mean, I know the Hebrew word, but what's that got to do with it?
Owning.
Owning?
Counting.
Maybe.
Did you count families?
How would you count them?
I don't know.
We don't count by number. The way the Torah describes the counting in the census is everyone donated this coin called a half shekel. Right? If you've been to Israel, right?
Name.
It's still who what?
By name.
Yeah, I'm
by if it's not by number, then by name.
No, so they did. Every person donated that a shekel, half a shekel, and you count the number of shekels. You count the number of them. That's how you know how many people there were. So if I collected half a shekel from everyone here, I'd say, oh, look, there's nine people. Right? I would count the number of half shekels. But we don't count by people. We don't count by number. It's a bad omen.
It's like proclaiming your supremacy.
King David made this mistake. I'm telling you, this book, you got it.
They took money with them?
Out of Egypt? We left super wealthy. That was the promise. That was the promise God gave Abraham. Okay, let me introduce you to this book. No, that is not true. We left. Donkeys and palladium and lots of
carpets and
just no yeast.
No time for it to rise. Okay, I'm telling you, folks. Homework. Get yourself a Torah. Read it.
Is this going to become a book club?
No, yeah.
It's been on the New York Times bestseller list for 3,300 years. All right, here we go.
They become mine.
Right, now it's getting harder and harder. I didn't feel like Shlubby is a big one.
Maybe you should get me one so that you have it here when you're here.
Only if you promise to read it when I'm not looking. All of a sudden she's quiet. Now all of a sudden she's quiet. The people picked up its dough before it could become leavened. Their leftovers bound up in their garments upon the ground. The children of Israel carried out the word of Moses. They requested from the Egyptians silver vessels, gold vessels, garments. Hashem gave the people favor in the eyes of the Egyptians, and they granted their request. So they emptied Egypt. They took it all out.
I had no idea.
Chapter and verse. I couldn't make this stuff up if I tried.
When Hashem said, I'll take you out of Egypt, he was talking to the half shekels.
Right.
Take the people out. I'm not telling you how many. So, okay, so we get to this census. So what was it? It was the same value. Everybody donated the exact same thing. It's not like a building campaign where you like the rich give this much and the rest of us give that
much. You got your mattress.
Right, exactly, exactly. So everyone gave the same value. No distinctions. On the one hand, that's a little, I don't know, disheartening, or you feel like I'm just a number. I'm just like everybody else. But the whole point of a census is you, the individual, count. It's an interesting, you know, dichotomy. Everyone gives the same, no distinctions, but you're unique in that you're counted. Like you are someone, you are counted. The way someone described it to me is beautiful. It's like any individual cell in your body. That individual cell, it counts. You need that cell. But when that cell, it lives, it dies, and then it ceases to exist. But how about the body? The body still moves on. The body still has other cells. So this individual singular cell has a dual function. It is its cell. It's its own purpose. But it's part of a much greater picture, a much greater purpose of being part of the body. That's the duality that we really tap into. We have individual personalities. We count individually. Every one of us counts, but you're not alone. You're always part of a greater whole, a bigger body, Am Yisrael. We exist on both levels. No? Yes?
Yeah.
You're struggling. You're digesting.
So everybody counts as an individual because they're giving shekels.
No, no, the idea of a census. When you fill out the U.S. census, right? It wants to know how many people in your family, ages this to this, ages that to that.
Florence.
Individual.
So that
but that one piece of information, the individual golding, right, it's as important as it is only to make up the body known as the U.S. Census so that we have statistics on a greater level. There's two levels. There's the individual and the big body. That's the suggestion being made here. The lesson of that of the census is that all are connected. We share a commonality called the Jewish people. That's really the goal of the census. That's really the whole thing. Okay. Let's go back to the practices. Okay. Number one, connecting. We talked about community. How about the idea of focusing? We talked a little bit about the noise, the background noise that is incessant in our lives. Don't have to answer the question to me, but you have to answer the question to yourself. When you get into the car, do you turn on the radio right away? Don't answer it to me, but you have to ask yourself that question. And if you do, like most of us do, why? Why are you not comfortable, or are you comfortable being alone with your thoughts? A lot of people are not comfortable with that because that means I have to think about, am I doing things right? What am I supposed to be doing this today? You really have to give thought. If you turn on the radio, either for music or talk radio or whatever it is, you have basically taken a sidestep and escaped whatever it is you're supposed to be thinking about and just taking in whatever someone else is doing, whether it's a song or talk radio. A lot of people are uncomfortable with themselves that way. So they hide in the noise, the distractions. Our Torah, our practice of Judaism forces us on many occasions to not do that. For example, how about the quiet of Shabbos? There's a certain quiet. I know in my neighborhood, it's great. Why? Because strangely enough, even though there's plenty of non-Jews in the neighborhood, streets are a heck of a lot quieter. Because the vast majority, if they're Sabbath observant, they're not driving on Shabbos. It's quieter. My walk, my 12 and a half minute walk from my house to my shul Shabbos morning until I hit Park Heights Avenue, which is a main thoroughfare, I'll be shocked if I see two cars driving. It's quiet. I love it. There's quiet. Just sitting Friday night, not on my computer, not checking my emails. There's a certain serenity. There's a certain quietness. Now, my house is never quiet. Okay? Baruch Hashem, we got people coming and going all hours of the day and night.
Sippy will be out
soon. Right? Sippy will be gone soon, but Rivka's got plenty of friends. She's the next in line. You know? My house is buzzing, right? But it's still, it's a totally different feel. Thursday night when I have bedlam in my house getting ready for Shabbos, right, with the cooking and the baking and the people coming and going, it's different than it is Friday night. There's a certain quietness.
Because if you turn your TV off and you don't get it, people aren't, you know, calling you. And
let's go back to point number one. What am I doing my whole time? What am I doing Friday night? If I'm not watching TV and I'm not checking my emails and I'm not...
You're thinking.
Or...
Praying.
Or what? Say, praying. Trust me.
Connecting with your family.
That's the answer.
I'm connecting with people. Have you gone to the coffee shop recently? Ever gone?
Everywhere's like...
People are walking in the grocery store. Like
it's that. Non-stop. We just did this teen trip. It was the hardest thing the entire trip. Getting the kids off, put your phones away. Mm-hmm. It was the hardest thing. All day, every day.
Teenagers.
So at some point, maybe it was the right thing. I don't know. I incentivized. I said, okay, let's put our phones down. Give me your phone. If you give up your phone for a day, I'll give you something for it. So the first time I did it, two kids, they said, fine, we'll give it up.
No photograph. I mean,
other people will take the pictures and we'll send it on the chat. Okay. We promise that we'll keep it up.
Okay. Right?
But that meant the bus ride while we were doing activity, you did not have your phone from 9:30, 10 o'clock in the morning until 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. Okay. I gave them each $50.
Dang.
Whoa.
I gave them each $50. Okay. I tried it the next day. Okay. So now people are like, ooh. And I made a big deal of it. I gave them a lot of credit because they know how hard it is.
And you gave them back the phone.
I gave them that night. I gave them the phone. And then the next morning, I announced, you know, and I wanted publicly on the bus. I got on the microphone and I gave them each $50.
Wow.
$50. It's a lot of money.
The cat needs a phone fund.
Wait, let me tell you what happened on day two. Day two, I said, okay, who's up for this time?
You had 30. How many people?
I had 9 more.
Wow.
9 kids that day said, I'll do it.
And the third day, you said, forget about it.
Thank God the third day was Friday. Uh-huh. And we were like, okay, you know, I was getting ready for Shabbos. Right?
What did they say about?
Ah. So here's excellent question.
I want to hear the conversation.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Both of them, the first day and all 9 the next day. Ready? Here's the kicker. Shabbos, we took everybody's phone. We didn't give an option. We said, nope. Shabbos, we put it and we went through the same way we went through the attendance every time we went somewhere. Okay. We counted off. Who's 1? Who's 2? I said, okay, I brought a big bag right before we left for shul Friday night. You have to give in your phone. 1, 2. I knew I wasn't missing anybody because we waited until 14, went and got their phone.
It was like a half shot.
Right? And yes, a half shot. Some phones were worth more than others. Right? They all give it. The comment, the overwhelming comment from the kids, both who gave it in on their own or for Shabbos, was, it really wasn't so bad. And I really appreciated that I got to look around and was present in the moment. Mm-hmm. The majority. Some of them were pulling their hair out. It's extremely.
Did you get $50 towards the 9?
So the second day I said it was only 40 because they weren't the initiators. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I gave out, in grand total, I gave out $460.
Wow.
That was my gift. If it taught them a lesson, if it at least made an imprint on them, they don't have to be on their phones all day, every day, then you know what? That was a great investment, the $500. Mm-hmm. But that is the problem. And it's not just the teens, folks.
No.
We are guilty of it. Mm-hmm. It's so easy. We have brought everything we quote unquote need into our hands. From entertainment to ordering food, I don't have to call my friend. Oh, we ran out of this. No problem. Amazon, it'll be here prime in 2 hours.
But there is a friend thing. I mean, maybe not my age is speaking or communicating with my friends as much, but like my kid, for example, isn't having the face to fit. Let's say there wasn't school,
right?
Which forces you. But it's not all social because they're at school. But
even that is social.
He's communicating this way.
Right.
He is social this way, but not this way.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct. That's connected, but totally disconnected. It's not a connection. It's not. This is the problem. This is a huge problem. That's what this Simon and Garfunkel is. There's noise everywhere. I'm surrounded. And yet what? People speaking and no one listening. There's nothing going on. Can't hear it. Focusing. We learn to focus as part of our observance. Prayer, by definition, it's not mouthing words. Do you know that the right thing to do is to actually come a few minutes early to the service and just contemplate? Put yourself in the right frame of mind. If you had an important meeting, right, you would just walk in, you know, just under the wire and get it in and just not have rehearsed it in your head? Of course not. So when our lives are on the line and we're asking God for important things, priorities in our life, what, we just think we're just going to mouth the words and like, sure. It's like a vending machine. Put in the coins, F2, out comes the Snicker bar, and we're good. That's not how God works. It takes focus. It takes concentration. right? We have to learn to eliminate some of the distractions. The Talmud gives such a beautiful symbolic. It talks about, it's really talking about prior to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, prior to the high holidays. And it describes the fact that we try to, you know, they're known as the 13 attributes of mercy, where we really try to invoke God to be compassionate and cut us a little slack because we're not perfect. So the Talmud gives this description about where did Moses learn these 13 attributes? It's in the Torah, but where did he learn it? So the Talmud says that God demonstrated it. What's the demonstration? God was wrapped in a talit over his head. That's an important piece. You'll see. It says he was wrapped himself in a talit and he shared these 13 attributes. And the commentators wonder, like, what's the significance of that? Why did it have to be that he was wrapped in a talit? As if, you know, like the classic picture over your head.
Concentration.
Right? It's concentration. But I think it's more than that. Do you know what a talit, what?
Full immersion.
Yes. When you put the talit over your head, guess what you can see? Just what's in front of you. It's blinders.
Ah.
Well, you also can't look at the face of God.
Good. But it's the idea of I'm facing this. I'm not looking what my neighbor's doing. I don't know what's going on the sides. My job is to stay focused. Think about the horse, right?
Yeah.
They put blinders. Why? Because that brush over there looks really tempting. Oh, and those bushes over there look even better, right? Put the blinders on. All the horse sees is the tuchus of the horse in front of it. That's what all you wanted to focus on. That's what we need to do. We have to eliminate a lot of these distractions.
Of course, excuse me.
Please.
100%, I get it. But there's also the value of the broad picture, right? You have the pinhole, you have the focus, but you don't want to be isolated in that. You need to know what I am part of the whole thing.
But you are. You're in the shul.
Oh, well, yeah. That's meant as a metaphor for everything.
Correct. I think we're always going to come back, in my opinion, to this duality. I, the individual, my focus, I have to tune out and really get myself squared away. But I recognize I'm part of a much bigger picture.
And I am part of a bigger picture and I need to know that because otherwise I think I have all the facts, but I really don't have all the facts.
Right.
So I also need to be not always one or the other.
Correct. You have to live in both worlds.
Yes.
I'm not suggesting one or the other. When in a classic yeshiva environment, right? When people are studying Torah, how do they do it?
Yelling.
Okay. They yell at each other. That's true. It's loud, but in groups.
Yes.
The best way is not to sit and do your own research. That is not the best way. You are to pair up and then ultimately be part of a bigger group. That's how you do it. You have to be part of a group. Again, in different synagogues, they do it differently, but the Amidah in many places is first said silently, and then there's a repetition out loud. Why?
That balance.
That's the answer. The answer is that first I have my silent moment. This is my personal conversation with God, but I also recognize that I'm part of a tzibur. I'm part of a congregation. We do it as one, and we have a leader, and we respond. It's back and forth. We live in both worlds. So reconnecting, that's community. Focusing, eliminating distractions, prayer, reflection, right? Here's another one in terms of keeping the connection with people, serving others, doing something for someone else. I had to bring it. It's, this is called the Erev list. In Baltimore, it's the directory of people who live in the general area. It's got names. It's great. And it's got a million other things. But what I wanted to share with you is three pages.
It's a phone book.
It's a massive phone book with so much more. So much more. But I'm just going to draw your attention to two pages. On the top, it says, can you read what it says?
No.
Gemachs. Okay. Gemachs. Anyone know what a gemach is?
No.
Yes. A gemach is actually, it's a Hebrew, it's an acronym. It's not a real word.
Really?
She doubts. It's great. I can make stuff with masses. Gemach is gimel mem chet. Yeah. There's no such word as gemach. Gemach is more like a Yiddish word. Was gemach? You know. No, gemach stands for gemilut chasadim.
Oh.
That's what I thought you were going to say. Gemilut chasadim is bestowing kindness, loving kindness. But it's an acronym because who's got time to write the whole thing? Gemilut chasadim. So they write gemach. This is two pages of what's available in the community for people to borrow for anything. It's printed this way, right? You ready? Medical equipment.
Needed or I have?
If you need, call here.
Oh, nice. Medical equipment?
Wheelchairs, walkers, crutches, bath chairs, commodes, need walkers, right? Again, 11. 11 different either organizations or people that you can contact if you need. If somebody's visiting and you need someone's visiting from out of town and they need a wheelchair, no problem. Call so-and-so. They have an extra. You know, they have it. How much does it cost? Zero. Okay, Beaker Cholim Entertainment.
Oh, wow.
People who, unfortunately, they're sick for a while, and as kids, come on, you know, we'll bring over a clown, or you know, we'll make arrangements to some kind of entertainment. Baby items, formula, baby and children's headphones. Sometimes you go to these weddings, right? It is so loud, right? If you don't want your little infant to ring, because, you know, it's your brother-in-law and sister-in-law that are getting married, you have to be there, and you have a three-month-old. You can't necessarily leave them at home. They have headphones, baby headphones. I just did the wedding last night. Sure enough, I have one at home, by the way, if you ever need. Okay? You have a bris pillow, right? You have a bris. Yeah, someone's happy making a bris, so they put the baby on a pillow. So instead of some yucky pillow that you have in your house, there's a nice, beautiful, embroidered, so it looks, you know, proper. I can go down the list here. A pack and play for vacation or visiting guests, car seats, bathtub, high chairs, cribs, gates. Baby, you know, baby. I'll speak Yiddish now. Du bist Mishiga. Religious items, miscellaneous, furniture, right? Use of a fax machine in those days, like you're ready to do nowadays. Okay? A power washer.
That's awesome.
You name it, somebody is willing to have it and lend it to you. If you live your life not just for yourself, but you have an eye towards how can I help someone else, you stay connected. You can't become lonely. You're getting phone calls. There's a tablecloth gemach. Mm-hmm. Tablecloth. We made, Baruch Hashem, my daughter got engaged a few weeks ago, so we had a little party. Thank you. Right, a little party. I don't want to use my tablecloth. I want something a little fancy, right? Problem. So you make a donation to the gemach, whatever it was, $18. Beautiful tablecloths that get dry clean, right? Weren't they beautiful?
Beautiful.
Stunning. Tablecloth gemach.
You didn't go to the tablecloth?
You're such a guy.
It's nice.
To me, that's part of how we strategize not to fall into this trap. If you're all for yourself and it's only about you, you're going to get lonely. You're going to. And the fourth piece is being honest with yourself and saying, you know what? I need help. If you're honest with yourself and say, I can't do this myself, right? After COVID is a perfect example. Working with older people, they didn't even know how bad a rabbit hole they fell into. Mm-hmm. Right? It's horrible to watch.
And the whole thing about every single person that went to a hospital for anything couldn't have
people. Right.
So it was.
Trust me, Ilana went every day. My wife went every day. My wife's a nurse. She didn't miss a day during COVID. She went every day to the hospital. I worked from home and she's like, I can't. She went every day.
And but the people that were in there, their daughters and sons and whatever, couldn't come. And yeah, that was difficult.
Very, very difficult. So to me, this is step one. Step one, recognizing that the sound of silence is dangerous. It's really, really, we have to come up with strategies. But there's a positive. There's another totally different perspective on silence. Silence is a wonderful thing. It really, really is. The Mishnah tells us in Pirkei Avos, the Ethics of the Fathers, there's nothing better for the body than silence. You wonder about that. You're like, really? Why do you say that? Okay, I'm curious. Why do you think the sages would tell us silence is a wonderful trait? It's a wonderful thing.
Can I share something?
Please.
So my son has a pair of noise cancellation headphones. Yeah, he uses them when he goes shopping or whatever. And so one day he said, "You want to try them, Mom?" And I was like, "Okay." And we're in our house, and we don't have a TV. We don't have TV or anything, so it's not loud in my house typically.
I can send you a few kids.
And so he just pops them on my ears and it canceled the sound. And I literally fell to my knees. It was like an exhale. Like, oh, it was incredible.
Why?
I just gave every cell in my body rest.
Because we're always going.
You know?
Okay. There is definite truth to that, Lauren. We are nonstop. We're going and going and going.
Well,
and you need to take a time out.
Isn't there a difference between being in silence or isolating yourself from noise?
Yes.
There is some difference.
Yes. But this is step one. Mm-hmm. What's the advantage of silence as opposed to just, I'm just going to, you know, isolate myself from noise? There's a difference, and I alluded to it earlier. Silence is more than, can be more than just an absence of noise. It could be something positive.
It felt clean.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Come on, I'm looking for a couple of key words.
Getting to know yourself.
Thank you. That's really the introspection. Getting to know yourself. Right on. You cannot do that when there's so much noise. And it doesn't have to be other noise. It's your own noise.
Mm-hmm.
And you're jumping. It is. It is. But some of it, a lot of it, is our own doing.
Yes.
Because I go back to the fact that we turn on the radio as soon as because we don't want to think. We don't want it. Why? Why is it uncomfortable? For the same reason people hate the high holidays.
Why do people hate yourself?
Because you have to be honest with yourself and say, you know what?
Oh.
I got to do a little more introspection. Teshuvah. I don't want to put in the time.
Yom Kippur keeps falling on my birthday.
What a bummer, right? It's hard. But what silence can offer us is really what we want out of life. An opportunity, that's the key word. It's an opportunity to refocus. Am I doing the right thing? Is this really? I know I should be working. I said this last time and I'm saying to myself, right? I said this last Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur that I'm really going to try and work on my not speaking Lashon Hara. Okay, we're now holding January, so we're 5 months into this, okay? Good news, it's a Jewish leap year. You get an extra month before next year's Rosh Hashanah. Okay, so we have 13 months to do this. We've already wasted 5, okay? I still got 7, 8 months to do this. I don't have silence. Tell me when's the next time I'm going to think about this.
Next
right before next year's Rosh Hashanah. Silent. Am I wrong? I'm not. I know I'm not wrong on this one. But that's the way it goes. If you don't take the opportunity, and you have to be able to say, I'm out. I'm going to use silence. I can grow from silence. Is it uncomfortable at first? Yes. But after a while, isn't that what meditation is?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that for any yoga? You have to meditate. Why? Because it's not just a physical exercise. It's a frame of mind. Get yourself in a frame of mind. Okay. You can only do that and there's silence. And I'm not talking about absolute silence and noise canceling. I'm talking about where you can put all this up here and out there aside and really just be within yourself. Discover yourself. You're spot on with that. With all the funny faces you make, you really do not understand what I'm saying. Are you going to say something? No. Go ahead. Come on, Dimitri. Come on. Give me something there. No. Okay. There really is. There really is a lot to be said for this. And I can go on and on. It's late already. There was a doctor. Her name was Jacqueline Olds, associate professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School, co-author of The Lonely American, published in 2010. She wrote the following. We often live our lives on autopilot, putting all our time and energy into things that don't matter that much in the long run and severing our connections with the things that really do matter. Often it's the lack of contact with other people that comes to mind when the topic of disconnection is brought up. But that's not the only type of connection that people are neglecting in today's culture. Here are the two she says. If I said it, you'd be like, yeah, whatever. She says it. Number one. Two other things are relationship with God, not the rabbi, was certainly an essential connection, and contact with God's creation, nature.
Yeah.
We all know it intuitively. We've all experienced it. Clear your head. Go for a walk. Just walk out and see the nature. Walk in a forest, in a nice wooded area, shady area, or sit by the beach. It's quiet. It's so helpful. Look around. I mean, I just had the good fortune. We took the kids out. We saw the Grand Canyon, right? If you haven't been there, go there. And if you have been there, go again. But go to the Watchtower all the way on the other side. Most people do not do that. I recommend it highly. The Southern Rim is great. It's beautiful. And depending what time of year, but 22 miles to the right, at the far end, actually is a merging of two canyons, and you actually see the Colorado River. We were there right before sunset. It was magnificent. The whole Shoresh gang, we broke out in song. It was like this soft, melodious, and all the tourists were like taking pictures of us. And then be like, wait a second, did we go to the canyon or we went to a concert?
Shouldn't be there beautiful. Two words for silence? One for silence as the absence of sounds, and others absence of unnecessary stimulation.
There could be two.
Principle different.
I'm with you. I don't know of the English two words, but you're right. I'm identifying two very different
of sounds, but they're not introducing any conflict in schizophrenic.
Yeah. I thought stimulation. Exactly that point. That's really the idea. That's exactly the point.
There should be two words.
You know, 24% in a 2016 Public Religion Research Institute study, 24% of Americans claim no formal religious identity.
24%.
That's a quarter of our people. No religious connection. Zero. Zero. Compared in 1991, okay, it's not that long ago, it was only 6%.
Oh, that's an astounding statistic.
We're unfortunately, but we're seeing the results. Mm-hmm. I think we are.
How many people believe in simulation theory now?
Oh yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right.
But doesn't everybody have a relationship with God? They just define God in different ways. And people who say that they, 24% have no connection with God, they might be connected to self-manufactured deities. Like,
these are people who they answered the question.
Or celebrities.
That's amazing.
So that's the, is that, yes. Do I think that,
so there's
as the song goes, right? As the song reads, and the people bowed and prayed to the neon God they made. Notice the lowercase g.
Oh. All right.
Yes, people in God we trust is also very powerful.
I guess
deity.
I figured that before me.
You know, Right, money. People pray to money all day long. We're talking about something above ourselves. Again, this is not unique to Judaism. This is Americans, whatever religion. There's the point I'm making, I think, is that to live a fulfilling and meaningful life of where we don't fall into these traps that are very prevalent, especially in the modern world. You need things that are going to anchor us. We need things that are going to keep us grounded and keep us connected. We have to. I believe that Judaism does a very good job from the structure of it to provide that. Do we utilize it? Maybe not as much as we should, but it's there. The structure is there for us to be able to connect with people, to connect with God, to live our lives with a purpose towards someone else other than ourselves. I'm sure I've shared this with you. I confirmed this with an obstetrician. I had heard years ago that when children are born, the majority of them have their hands closed when they're born. Not necessarily clenched fists, but hands closed. One of the things that we do when we prepare for Jewish burial from the Chevra Kadisha, the burial society, one of the things they try to do is to make sure that the hands are open. Great symbolism in that. Why? Because there is no creature that is more self-centered, selfish, egotistical than an infant. It has no care and concern for how your day went. It's tired, it's hungry, it's dirty, it's fussy, right? You're exhausted. You've had a long day. You're hungry. You're tired. You're dirty. You've got everything in the book. And this, right? Totally closed unto itself. Totally. The goal after we pass through this world, before we're buried, is that hopefully we have learned our lesson of opening up our hands for others. Beautiful symbolic idea represented by that. But that's what I'm suggesting here. Using silence, it can be extremely difficult and lonely and hurtful. But silence, if used properly, is an opportunity to be introspective, thoughtful, mindful, considerate, take in a bigger picture and put away some of the noise, put away some of the distractions. So it's that duality. It has both. It's not evil, and it's not a panacea for everything either. It's both. I don't know. These were some of the thoughts that I had. I'm curious, anyone share thoughts about it? You'll never hear the song the same, I know.
I would say everything that you already said, but you already said it.
These are the thoughts that I have. I mean, that's what I love about our class. You can take almost any song if you take the time to analyze it a little bit. What is the perspective? Am I in agreement with it? Am I not? How does it play out in my life? It's more than just a song. And that was our first class. Song, I mean, it's the very first word in the Torah. Very first word, Bereshit, in the beginning, right? That's how you know God's a baseball fan.
In the big inning.
In the big inning. Sorry. In the beginning, the Hebrew word is Bereshit, but those six letters, also if you unscramble them and spell them a little bit, is Ta'ev Shir, Desires Song.
Oh, yeah.
Look at the world. It's a symphony. Look at it. Listen to it. God's talking to us. There's a song out there. Psalms is like, you know, I don't know. I'm going through it with one of my groups, you know, and I'm finding it more uplifting than I ever thought before. There's a lot there. That's the beauty of our class. Take a song. And again, you know, I mean.
I have a feeling of the song. There is a response to song, the melodies and the rhythm, because it's an instrument, among other things, for us to tune into some kind of a frequency on which a nonverbal communication can start.
I think that's true. I think 100%.
I need to figure it out in my head because I had it kind of from a point.
If it has to be, but because it talks to more than just the body.
Mm-hmm.
It touches the inner core of us.
Because all
positive and negative.
All cultures have music, right?
Yeah.
Regardless
of
the background.
Yeah. Music touches to the core of who we are as people. It's soul. It touches the soul in a much, much more profound way. The Vilna Gaon, or Velio Kramer, he was known as the genius from Vilna. He lived in mid-1700s. He said that if not for the wisdom of Torah, the highest level of wisdom in the world would be classical music.
Oh, wow.
Because it captures things that just don't, you don't hear it in rap music. I'm just saying. It's a little different.
Oh, it's not music.
Right. Fair enough.
It's poetry.
Fair enough.
It's poetry. It's a different thing.
But classical music, I mean, he's right. I mean, I'm not an expert in it. Right? But if you hear a piece, and you hear and it's conveying the story, and it, I mean, like, you can feel it. There's something to it. There's a wisdom that's tapping into.
Who's your favorite classical composer?
It's not. I don't have a favorite. I mean, I
would you?
Who? Tchaikovsky.
No, Rubinstein.
Rubinstein.
Yeah,
sounds Jewish. Yes.
So, what makes you say
that? That's what I love about this. Again, I open up. If there are any songs that you have in mind, forward it to me. I think I've gotten almost everybody's, at least one song off of everybody's list from the original when we did this together. No?
And it's a good one. I'm going to challenge you.
Okay.
You ready?
No.
All right. Carole King's You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman. Ooh. Natural Woman. I want to go there.
Go there.
Okay.
She's a
first. I have to figure out what is a natural woman, because I have woman. As opposed to an unnatural.
But listen to the song.
Well, be careful.
Listen to the song.
You gotta be careful.
No, don't be careful.
Don't be careful.
No.
I want to be invited back. Okay, I'll take a look at that. All right.
Thank
Wonderful.
You.
Thank you for your time, everybody.
Thank you.
Appreciate
Thank
it.
You. Thank you.
Really great.
No,
thank you, Rabbi.
Eat a snack. Nobody eats a freaking snack. By the way,
good.
I thank you.
Puzzle.
Pleasure.
Knows how to
great to see you.
Great to see you too.
Yeah, I'm fine.
You can stay on. I'm just going to turn off the recording.